recalled any early successes or early disasters as a young dealer.
I think the disasters you try your best to forget, but successes, I think that when you trade on your own book and you make your first £1,000 in one day, it's terribly exciting. And it was just a spur to come on to sort of get in the following morning. It was never a hardship to get out of bed in the morning and come to work. In fact, if you'd had a good trading week, it was a nuisance that it was Friday night and you had Saturday and Sunday off and you couldn't come back until Monday. It was that sort of excitement. And we used to do lots of bargains in property shares. We used to do, in some stocks, pages of them. And what we would call jobbing, where we would buy them at a price, sell them for a small profit, and we'd turn that stock over all day long, and at the end of the day, probably finish up with virtually nil position if we wished. And prices, when we were LSD, we used to have quotations such as threepence clo-clo, which was three farthings either side of threepence. And certainly at the end of the day, we had to take out our own P&Ls in each stock to see how we had done on the day. Although you had a rough idea during the day whether how much you thought you'd made or lost. But and there were quick ways of calculating your P&Ls. I mean, you used to know that 1,003 farthings was £3.26. And 1,000 threepences were £12.10. I mean, that was just in your head, and everything was done in Penny Haby Street, farthings and sixpences. If you're lucky now, then you may have made a bob on something. But,
do you find that you did develop a fairly sharp memory for figures?
Oh, yeah. And it was something that was necessary, really. Because if you didn't, then somebody over the road with the opposition did, and that. Probably the difference between being successful or unsuccessful. And it really was, to a degree, a sharp mind.
Did you feel yourself directly competing with other jobbers?
Oh yeah, very much so. And was certainly in the property share market, it was very competitive as we were the late entry. As I think. The two jobbing firms that were there when we joined, one was a firm called Denny Brothers and the other a firm, Anchortel. Denny Brothers merged with Pynchon, it was known as Pynchon Denny, and Anchortel merged with Aykroyd, strange enough. And prior to us merging with Aykroyd, Bird and Gottschalk merging with Aykroyd, Aykroyd had ceased to trade in property shares, but unfortunately they got them back again when we appeared on their doorstep.
Were there smaller jobbers in the same market?
Certainly in Rhodesian and South African stocks, there were lots of two-man firms, but as time went by they slowly ceased.
Where did they fit in? Did they compete directly with the bigger jobbers? Or
they would compete directly with the bigger jobbers in the smaller number of shares and would go to the bigger jobbers to unwind the positions. And there was always in the big jobber and the small jobber's interest that they got on well together. Because it didn't matter if you were much bigger than somebody else. If you wanted to buy something, you wanted to sell something, you wanted to buy, wonderful. Mm. So there was a reasonable relationships in those days.
What would happen if the bigger jobber didn't have a position that he, well, didn't either want to buy or sell, depending on
what? Try and find another. Bigger job of the depth in that market, because certainly in the early days I was on the stock exchange for quite a few jobbing firms down there. But I would assume if he couldn't, he'd just have to sit with a position, or he'd perhaps go to a stockbroker, and a stockbroker might be there to help him out of it.
Now, how long were you a dealer? When did you become a member of the stock exchange?
In January 66.
Mm. And what did membership entail?
Membership? What did it entail? Membership entails you to use members' lavatories, was one. And equally, it was a status symbol as well, the fact that you were a member of the stock exchange. It was sort of a warm feeling. It was just sort of more progression, really. And you couldn't become a part of a firm unless you were a member. So if you had any aspirations of becoming a partner, you'd have to be a member before that.
Did you find that you were requiring extra responsibility as a dealer?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, as time was drifting along, extra responsibility and more opportunity to expand on positions I ran, etc.
And when was it that you actually were asked to become a partner?
That was in March 69.
And how did that come about? Were you invited into a room one day and asked to become a partner?
Literally, yeah. And I had to find £100 to put into the partnership. And I didn't have £100 at that stage. And I went to the bank, and they loaned me £100, and that's went into the partnership as a very, 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 very junior partner.
How big was the firm then? You know, not an exact figure, but say comparing it with other stock exchange firms, was it?
We were probably a similar size to one of our competitors, Smith Brothers. We were probably of similar size, actually.
Did you feel there was anything distinctive about Berger at this stage? Did you think it was different from other jobbing firms, or was it fairly typical?
We were, in some ways, similar, not only size to Smith Brothers, but similar in our way of thinking. In fact, that we were probably more active traders than one or two of our other oppositions.
And were the senior partners still thinking in terms of expanding the business and becoming larger?
At that stage we were still expanding and getting larger in so much that we were taking on larger deals. And as time drifted by, or drifted on, jobbing as such, which was the art of just buying and selling all day long the same stocks, started to dry up, and there was a necessity to start running what we would call larger positions that probably weren't covered so easily at the end of the day, and were carried on for the following day or the day after that, or maybe a week after that. But numbers were dwindling, and position taking was becoming more of the art, in fact.
Why do you think that was the case?
Difficult to remember looking back, but it may well have been that private client business was dwindling. It may well have been that institutions as such were beginning to get in more and more cash, and their need then to deal in larger amounts. Mm. And to accommodate that, I think automatically came larger positions.
Which, if I understand you rightly, were much more difficult to unwind on a short-term basis.
Quite difficult to unwind. So one would run those positions, perhaps slightly longer than one we wanted to at that stage, but it was a change in system that was beginning to evolve.
Would you say then that the markets were becoming a little less liquid?
markets less liquid in so much that it wasn't so easy to go home with square books, but perhaps becoming more liquid in size of bargain, where considerations of some of the individual bargains that jobbers were beginning to take on were quite sizable. Quite sizable.
Did you have any feelings about the size of the business brokers were approaching you with, or I mean, was it something that was a concern to you?
I think it was something really that we were growing into, and if you were fortunate enough to do a few of the larger bargains that actually worked in your favour, then the risks were greater, but so were the rewards, and that was the incentive.
Did the firm have enough capital to cover some of these big positions?
The firm, the date I can't exactly remember, sold 30% of itself to a consortium, three institutions. One was Charter Consolidated, one was Samuel Montague, and the other one was the Pearl Assurance. So in doing so, obviously some capital was brought into the firm.
And would you say that was the prime reason?
That was one of the reasons, actually, to get a better capital base. And the timing of doing it was such that obviously it must have been in our minds at the time to have gone for the capital base then, because these bargains were getting larger and we felt it necessary that we should have a bigger capital base.
Were the banks of any use in providing short-term capital?
Always. I think they'd probably give us, I can't remember exact figures, but if we deposited £10,000 worth of shares at the bank, we could probably gear that up with a multiple of something like 7 or 8 times its value on borrowings from the bank.
Do you think you could have run the business without any assistance from the banks?
I don't know what other source of capital we'd have got, but it was certainly necessary. Certainly necessary.
Now, what did becoming a partner involve in terms of your responsibilities in the firm? Did it change in any way?
Well, as time then time went on, probably nearer 70, 70, 71, that sort of time scale, I think I may have then been in charge of the book on a day-to-day basis.
And what did that mean?
That meant that I was responsible for the pitch, the people that worked on the pitch, the individuals, our positions, and simply really making money out of the book. But it was down to me, in fact.
What would have a typical day have been like for you at this time? For example, where were you living?
Then, in up to 71, I was living from, let me try and remember, 65 to 71, I was living in Enfield, and then from 71, August 71, I moved and to where I live now, which is a village called Bendigo, about a mile north of Hertford Town.
Were you married?
Yep, when we moved to Enfield and Bendigo.
So what time of day would you be sitting out for the office?
Then, I try and get into the office round about, certainly from 71 onwards, at about 8:30, quarter nine. And if we didn't meet in the office, we'd have met in coffee shop and sort of chatted about the day ahead, what we thought the market was going, where what it was doing, where it was going, and just generally swapping ideas and thoughts.
And then what would happen?
And then we'd walk onto the stock exchange floor. We were allowed on, I think, at 9:15, although those times did change as... not change a great deal, but they did change. Through most of the period, it would have been a 9:15 onto the stock exchange floor, where we put our prices up on the board, and the stockbrokers were allowed in at 9:30.
Did you find that during the trading day, there were periods which were busier than others? And was there a kind of rhythm in the thing?
First thing in the mornings, you'd be busy. Lunchtime, lunch periods, quiet, and then probably a flurry towards late afternoon and the close.
What would you do for lunch?
Lunch? Early days, we would go to the ABC, which was, I think, the Aerated Bread Company, which is in the basement of Warnford Court, where we could get a meal, pudding, coffee for one luncheon voucher to the value of 15 pence. But then as time went by and the firm expanded, we got our own dining room on the top floor in Warnford Court, and we occasionally dine there with guests, and guests being primarily stockbrokers.
Were there particular broking firms that did a lot of business with Berger?
We had certainly in property shares, we were very fortunate that, if there's such a thing, I think we became what's known as the market in property shares. And in the early days, one of the main brokers that we dealt with was Reedhurst Brown, which became Rowan Pittman. And another firm that started broking property shares about the same time we started jobbing in property shares was Quilter Goodison. And say in those early days, it was Sir Nicholas Goodison that started the business for, mind, they weren't Quilter Goodison then, I think they were H.E. Goodison when he first looked at property shares. But we built up an extremely good business with him too. And as we became what the terminology, the market, we would deal with most stockbrokers on the basis that if they had large orders to do, then they thought that perhaps we were the place to they may land on. But in the very, very early days, we had quite fierce competition between ourselves, Denny Brothers and Cattell, as we attempted to get into the market as such. As time went by, I think it's fair to say we fortunately became the market in them, so we would see most stockbrokers.
Was there a temptation then to make slightly, I was going to say uncompetitive prices, but that's probably not the right word, but not having someone who's competing against you directly, did that mean that you were slightly more relaxed?
If you were in a market on your own, mm-hmm. with just yourself and a smaller jobber, then you probably did have things reasonably, but one would assume that that would have been not a particularly active market. If it was an active market, then other jobbers would join in. If they thought you were sitting there all on your own and you had to yourself, then somebody would join the party.
What was the feeling about jobbers moving into different sectors? For example, some people have said to me that it wasn't regarded as the done thing.
Not particularly easy, and if you were determined enough, you could actually start up a market or go into a market and just take the complaints that went with it, but sort of soldier on, really.
Just to revert to this typical day for a few moments, you'd leave the stock exchange at about 3:30 when it closed, would you?
3:30, it would close. Go back to the office, which was the opposite side of the road in Warnford Court. where we'd stay. We'd take our books out, P&Ls, profits and losses. We'd put them in a general book where all the different markets put in their profits and losses, and we could see how much we'd made or lost on the day. And same time, I mean, towards the, there was always business after hours on the telephones, and we'd probably leave around about 5:30, 5:45. When we were extremely busy, certainly in the very early days when I was a Blue Button, we were extremely busy. We were doing loads of bargains in property shares to keep books and everything up to date. We'd sometimes sit there till 9 or 10 o'clock at night just to make sure that they were absolutely correct for the following morning. Because if they weren't correct, it would take weeks and weeks of work at a later date actually sorting it out. Plus the fact that the boss at the time wouldn't be very pleased either. So you sat there until you got it right.
What would you do in the way of holidays?
Holidays?
Don't you remember any?
Yeah, we'd have the summer holiday with children, and from sort of bucket and spade in England or Wales or Scotland, wherever, we took them, took the eldest then, the first child then, for her first trip abroad, and we probably, up until the ages where they no longer wish to come with us, took them abroad once a year during August time.
Were there particular times in the year when it simply wouldn't have been reasonable to consider going away on a holiday?
Yeah, certainly would be. If we were busy, then holidays have been known to being put off. And it's like every business that if it's there, you want it. If it's not there, then fine, you feel a wee bit more relaxed to go away. But if you're actively trading, it's an active period, then it people have been known to put off holidays, yeah.
Now, the early 70s was a period when first there was an enormous boom in property.
Yep.
And then you had the crash.
Then we had the crash in 73-4.
Yes. Now, how did these events affect Berger?
Well, certainly during the boom period, in early 70, 71, 72, were very profitable years, and the market peaked out, if I can remember, on November the 13th. I think it was November the 13th. And interest rates went to 13%. And we had a pretty sizable bull book on that day. And once these rates hit 13%, we changed, if I can remember rightly, saying to the guys, well, you're going to have to put the market down 5% and sell it. Just sell our bull positions out. And if we haven't cleared the bull positions after 5%, put the market down another 5% until we do clear it. Well, at the end of the day, we'd gone from quite a big bull position to quite a big bear position, and we'd turned totally. And there was a small rally, I think, the following day after that. Then the market started to come down, and we maintained our bear positions throughout the period. So in fact, gain touch wood, we were pretty fortunate that we did run the bear positions through the, which was a horrible bear market. I mean, some of the leading companies that are on the screens now got down to quite ridiculous prices in their, I think, British Lands, which super company, actually got down to 5p, no big figure. But from prices perhaps in the mid £2.50s, that sort of level, they just came right the way back. And as you know, it then started to bring secondary banks down, property market then sort of brought secondary banking down, and some wonderful companies that are up there now were rumoured as being insolvent. But fortunately, most scraped through. But that really was a bear market. And I think the index got down to 150, 160, was it, the industrial index? But anyway, it's at the end of that period, and we'd we'd actually made quite a lot of money on the bear tack in property shares. For some reason, rumours abound in the stock exchange that we were in all sorts of trouble as a firm because we'd lost an enormous amount of money in property shares. But in fact, it was the opposite that was true. We actually made quite a lot of money. And it was during 74 that it may have been the result of some of those rumours, but the partnership, as it was, or senior partners, partnership of the firm. Well, we didn't have a partnership. We had directors then, because we'd formed a limited company. So we had a few directors, and we had, I think we were either known as managers or shareholders or something. But we were in the members' book, but I can't remember exactly what it was. And anyway, the directors of the company decided to cease trading and liquidate the firm, which they did. And most of us went to back to Owen Smithers. Mm. And they reappeared on their doorstep again with a property book, which they'd ceased to trade some time earlier.
Why do you think the senior directors of the firm decided to liquidate?
It's a difficult one. Being a partnership, most of the cash in the firm was theirs, and it was a decision that they, between them, had come to. But plus the fact, I think, I actually remember why they came to that decision. It may have been that the index was at such a low level. Difficult to know, but it was a voluntary liquidation. But prior to that, prior to liquidation, we had in fact had aborted merger talks with Ackroyd, and we had had aborted merger talks with Bisgood, as then Bisgood Bishop, but both the negotiations fell through both those firms, and a decision was taken finally to liquidate the company.
Had you had any say in that decision?
To a degree, and to a degree a say in the, but not as a director of the company. But I think I remember sort of giving my views, but that's where the decision lay at the end of the day, was with the directors of the company.
How would you characterise the firm just before it did liquidate? Was it still, would you still sort of put it in the same kind of category as Smith's?
We were probably still very similar to Smith.
So would you say it was a medium-sized?
We were medium-sized, I think, yeah.
What was the feeling in the stock exchange to a firm like Berger liquidating? Because, say, in the previous year, you had a big gilts firm, Francis and Praed, going out, and some of the smaller firms also liquidating, and there was this reduction in the number of jobbing firms.
Yeah, I think, it was a firm with an enormously good reputation that I think a lot of people were probably disappointed that the firm as such was leaving the stock exchange. But fortunately, most of us stayed together and moved on to Ackroyd and Smithers, where they gave, from the day we joined, we were given a reasonable amount of leeway to continue our business the way we run it in the past, and say fortunately for all concerned, it worked out reasonably successfully.
Hmm. How would you contrast Aykroyd with Berger as a firm? I suppose they're both companies.
Well, Aykroyd basically were a gilt hedge firm with a good equity business, but primarily a gilt hedge firm that obviously wanted more coverage in the equity market.
Did they have a different style of jobbing or a different attitude to jobbing?
Probably not as active as traders as we were. We were probably very similar to Smith, and we would trade and trade and trade and trade. Well, they were probably a wee bit more, not so active in turning stocks and shares over. Mm. But then equally, similar to ourselves, I think where we probably differed slightly to Smith was